from deep inside your radio.
From Santa Fe, New Mexico, ladies and gentlemen. It's a mile high. It's higher than Denver. Think of it. Yes, that's what I'll be thinking of. We have, on the subject of the Japanese nuclear stuff, this from Hideaki Shiroyama, a professor at the University of Tokyo who studied nuclear safety policy. It's a bit strange for me that we have officials saying this, you know what this is, was outside expectations. Unexpected things can happen. That's the world we live in, unquote. Doesn't that sound, isn't it beginning to sound familiar? No one could ever have predicted that, and then fill in the blanks, for almost everything that's happened over the last 8-9 years. Down in the Gulf, no one ever could have imagined that the blowout preventer pipe would buckle. That's what we learn in the latest forensic report on the oil spill and the reaction to it. No one could have imagined this stuff. Both, going back to Hideaki Shiroyama in the University of Tokyo, both the regulators and Tokyo Electric Power are trying to avoid responsibility. Really, never seen that behavior before. That is a new one on me. Najmeddin Meshkati, sorry. While we're on the subject of me mispronouncing stuff, Ouagadougou, not Ouagadougou. 500,000 listeners told me last week after the broadcast, Ouagadougou. All right, then. Anyway, Dr. Meshkati, a professor of civil and environmental engineering at USC, Trojans, said the Japanese government's approach of relying heavily on the private electric company to do the right thing, largely on its own, had clearly failed. Really, so we need, what you're saying is we need less regulation, right? That's the way I understand it. But it's almost as if, ladies and gentlemen, the problems that surround us are being caused by too many people who don't foresee the worst. I think in the book Fiasco, the defense correspondent from the Washington Post wrote that the problem, one of the problems that seemed to underlie the tactics, the strategy, not the overall policy of the Iraq War once it got going, was nobody had a plan B. We need more plan Bs in this modern world, don't you think? I think maybe you just need more neurotic, nervous people in positions of power who will ask, but what if it, that's what we need. We need more of those. On a more reassuring note, ladies and gentlemen, Circle City Marketing and Distributing, doing business as Candy Dynamics in Indianapolis, is issuing a voluntary recall of toxic waste bubblegum. Yes, something turns out was wrong with toxic waste bubblegum. Who could have thought it? And because the world doesn't produce enough irony on its own, President Obama this week decided to help out. So he accepted an award this week for making the government more open and transparent. And he accepted that award in secret. The White House even left the event off the president's public schedule so no one knew about it, and requests for journalists to cover the meeting by those attending were turned down. An award for open and transparent government accepted in secret. Thanks for writing my material, sir. Hello, welcome to the show.
kusikie, roile nomba kwa kwa tuye joe ya maisha, mita sitika na nyongo na akindo kandia. Nawa moyo sana ila na ina kusikie, roile nomba kwa tuye joe ya maisha, mita sitika na nyongo na akindo kandia. Nyendia kwa tamajibu Neke wafununu watino wakwate muse Wakuma katula nika saunga kita usenga Natumye valoka na nyendia kwa tamajibu Neke wafununu watino wakwate muse Wakuma katula nika saunga kita usenga. Kamea kwa mbedhi kala wisi ndie ka Wasi haka kamwana muhime uwa kandeva Hawena ibu ya kwa emi itato hii ya tei Kamea kwa mbedhi kala wisi ndie ka Wasi haka kamwana muhime uwa kandeva. Nikuna visa wakunga vile ya ngango ya kwa Ima wenzi ya lawa mbona siyama isiti Nga ikweli yebi na eva mbibi kweli ndo wa kwa. Kuongelange tumatuko Kona enye na medho ngazi ya waeyo wakwa Waneza weni watu aiwe ya mivango ya ngali Niwaya ngaimbe vya kuongelange tumatuko Kona enye na medho ngazi ya waeyo wakwa Waneza weni watu aiwe ya mivango ya ngali.
From Santa Fe, New Mexico, the heart of New Mexico, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. In case you think nothing can go wrong, even but just doing a simple live radio show, let alone running a nuclear plant, stay tuned. I'm promising something will happen that we didn't foresee. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the new F-bomb foreclosures. A Fort Lauderdale, Florida lawyer has agreed to pay the state of Florida $2 million to settle allegations of improprieties. That's all they were. Just improprieties in mortgage foreclosure cases. This is according to the Florida Attorney General. Look back to our interview with Eve Smith of a few weeks ago if you want to know what improprieties in mortgage foreclosure cases means. The settlement was with Marshall C. Watson. Not Marshall Watson. And his law firm. Case focused on whether foreclosure documents they had submitted to the court were false, misleading, or accurate. That's all. You know, like if you submit documents to the court. Just an impropriety. The settlement also requires the firm to meet certain requirements in the conduct of its business. I would presume they would include not doing that again. Watson said in a prepared statement, he's pleased the investigation has been resolved. He's pleased to pay $2 million, meaning he probably should have been paid a lot more. Fannie Mae was alerted to abuses by lenders and their law firms in the foreclosure system in 2006, long before official investigations began, according to the Wall Street Journal, owned by Rupert Murdoch. Imagine that. They're citing an internal report by the government-controlled Fannie Mae. The report said foreclosure attorneys in Florida had tried to speed up the process by routinely making false statements in court. It also raised questions over the legal standing of some mortgage servicers. All this, as told by Eve Smith, oddly enough. An unidentified Fannie Mae spokeswoman said the agency had addressed the issues raised in the 2006 report and regularly monitored behavior of lawyers. Don't tell that to Mr. Watson. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. This from the Telegraph in London. You know that Moussakoussa, and now that I can't say Ouagadougou anymore, I can say Moussakoussa. So they haven't taken all the fun out of life. Ouagadougou, sorry. I couldn't even say that. Anyway, Moussakoussa, the former foreign minister of Libya, has decamped to England, to London. Oh, to be in London with Moussakoussa. They have, pains have been taken to say he hasn't defected, okay? But he is talking to officials of the British government. Now this is from the Telegraph of London. Official documents released in February as part of a review of the release of Abdel Basset al-Megrahi, the convicted Lockerbie bomber, show the pivotal role Moussakoussa played in the Lockerbie bomber's return to Libya. Koussa is described in one Foreign Office email as the man, quote, whom Gaddafi has tasked with securing Megrahi's return, unquote. The series of documents show how eager the then Labour government was to keep Moussakoussa informed of developments as negotiations got underway for Megrahi's release. The government feared Megrahi, who has terminal cancer but is still alive, would die in a British jail, leading to the collapse of lucrative oil and trade deals. One briefing document written in January 2009, about 6 months before Megrahi's release, reveals how Moussakoussa agreed to have Megrahi's appeal against his conviction withdrawn if he was sent back home. It suggests Moussakoussa did not want any further details about the Lockerbie bombing to come out in a British court. Well, why would you? It might. Yes, it might indeed. And a WikiLeaks cable from 2009, I believe it's August 18th. It's not a WikiLeaks cable, it's a cable WikiLeaks has published and has been in the Guardian newspaper in London, characterizes the overall pace of the bilateral relationship between the United States and Libya as excellent. You know who was in on this meeting on our side? Senator John McCain. He opened the August meeting with Muattasim Gaddafi, one of Gaddafi's sons, by noting the drastic change that the relationship had undergone over the last 5 years. We never would have guessed 10 years ago that we'd be sitting in Tripoli being welcomed by a son of Muammar al-Qaddafi, remarked Senator Joe Lieberman, also a part of the delegation. He stated that the situation demonstrated that change is possible and expressed appreciation that Libya had kept its promises to give up its WMD program and renounce terrorism. Lieberman called Libya an important ally in the war on terrorism, noting that common enemies sometimes make better friends. The senators recognized Libya's cooperation on counterterrorism and conveyed that it was in the interest of both countries to make the relationship stronger. Muattasim, al-Qaddafi welcomed the high-level visit, don't you think? Describing it as a good sign for the relationship, a relationship that Libya wants to develop. He also requested assistance with upgrading Libya's equipment, including helicopters. Dun, dun, dun. Senator McCain assured Muattasim that the United States wanted to provide Libya with the equipment it needs for its security. He stated he understood Libya's request regarding the rehabilitation of its 8C-130s and pledged to see what he could do to move things forward in Congress. He encouraged Muattasim to keep in mind the long-term perspective of bilateral security engagement and remember that small obstacles would emerge from time to time that can be overcome. He described the bilateral military relationship between the United States and Libya as strong and pointed to Libyan officer training at U.S. war colleges as some of the best programs for Libyan military participation. Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi, who joined the group in the same tent, likewise highlighted the strength of the U.S.-Libya relationship. Gaddafi commented that friendship was better for the people of both countries and expressed his desire to see the relationship flourish. He thanked the senators for their visit and described America as a race rather than a nationality. It's a moment of Charlie Sheen in there. Oh, and Lindsey Graham was at the meeting, too. The senior Gaddafi remained quiet throughout the discussion and did not respond to any of the issues with the exception of Megrahi, the Lockerbie bomber. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. McCain, Lieberman, and Graham in the tent. Loitering with intent. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen, now, because it is Sunday after all. One of Britain's most high-profile Catholic priests has admitted arranging papal knighthoods for wealthy businessmen for money. Well, why else would you do it? What else do the businessmen have to offer? Oh, I know, entrepreneurial zeal. But still. Father Michael Seed, who regularly celebrated Mass for Tony Blair and his family in Downing Street, now faces questions from his religious order. Papal knighthoods are usually awarded to lay men and women, pardon the expression, for conspicuous service to the church and society. They're among the highest honors the Pope can bestow. But the source close to Father Seed's order, the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement, well chosen, said the superiors were appalled. A pedophile priest kept his freedom until he died in England after Sussex police destroyed the paperwork, reflecting the interviews with the victims. When the priest who had a history of abuse allegations died, a free man, in 2006, although two brothers reported the years of sexual abuse they were subjected to at the hands of Reverend Roy Cotton to police in 1996. When police linked Cotton to another case of child abuse that year, officials contacted Sussex police only to find the file, including vital photographs and other evidence, had been destroyed. The abused brothers have now won damages from the Diocese of Chichester in recognition that the Church of England did not act to stop Cotton. An accomplice, Reverend Colin Pritchard, from abusing them when they were choir boys in the 1970s and 1980s. This is Church of England, ladies and gentlemen. You thought when they split from the Catholic Church they renounced all of the Catholic Church's ways? Not so. Au contraire, mon frère. The former vicar of Bexhill, Pritchard, the accomplice, was jailed in 2008, but Cotton had died 2 years before the case came to court. In 1976, a 16-year-old boy told the dean of what was then Bishop John Newman Catholic High School in South Philadelphia that his religion teacher, Monsignor Michael Flood, had molested him on more than 16 occasions during that year. The Archdiocese of Philadelphia took its first definitive action to address those allegations earlier this month. Flood, now 71, was among 21 priests suspended amid allegations of sexual abuse or other improper behavior with minors. He was then serving as pastor of St. Luke the Evangelist, one of my favorite evangelists. But the case sheds light on what a Philadelphia grand jury has described as an ongoing pattern in which church leaders fail to properly investigate allegations of clerical misconduct. Leaders of the Archdiocese have known about the allegations against Flood since at least 2009. They have never opened their own independent investigation. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. It is, as you know, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, Tales of Airport Security. Tim writes, Dear Harry, I was traveling out of San Antonio, and they use full body scanners. I was kind of dreading going through them, but I figured it was better than being felt up. Tim, go to YouTube and watch Touch My Junk. Anyway, Tim continues, after I reached the first TSA agent and handed him my boarding pass and ID, I started toward the conveyor belt and scanner. Just at that moment, some other folks in wheelchairs and walkers cut in front of me. I patiently waited for them to pass. And then another TSA agent pointed out, "There's another line over here. You can use that one." Sure enough, behind a wall was another conveyor belt and metal detector, used for crew, I suppose. I started walking that way as directed, until I noticed, hey, no scanner. Nice. Wait, what? Asks Tim. Why does everyone else have to be scanned, and us lucky ones who are cut off by wheelchair people don't? I mean, if you're in a wheelchair, they scan you, but me and the young able-bodied guy behind me are exempt, just because we lucked out? Suffice it to say, I didn't ask any of those questions out loud, and quickly headed out of there to the gate. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, we haven't heard a lot about the United States Army Corps of Engineers lately, have we? You know, they're some of my favorite. Do you know what their trademark is, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, the United States Army Corps of Engineers has a trademark. Building strong. Sure, it's ironic. No more ironic than President Obama accepting a transparency award in secret. But maybe just about. Anyway, from New York City. Hi, New York. One of Fort Hamilton Army Base's biggest tenants, Fort Hamilton, is, I believe, in the Bronx. Sorry, no, Brooklyn. One of the Army base's biggest tenants wants to move to much more expensive Manhattan and hike its yearly rent by nearly $1 million in taxpayer money so its workers can have an easier commute. The Army Corps of Engineers, whose 100-plus workers occupy two buildings at the 186-year-old military post, says the majority of its employees will have an easier time getting to new Corps headquarters on Varick Street in downtown Manhattan, and it doesn't mind raising its annual rent from the $130,000 it pays in Brooklyn to the $1 million-plus rent in Manhattan. The Corps says it needs to be closer to its clients. Being in Manhattan, quote, says a Corps spokesman, will make it easier for us to travel to our customers and for our customers to travel to us, unquote. The Corps has customers, ladies and gentlemen. Who knew? It's just like CVS. It's just like Walmart. It has customers. And almost a year ago, an oil barge capsized in the Charenton Canal in St. Mary Parish, Louisiana. Today, the barge is still there. Parish and state leaders say they're fed up with the problem. The enormous 2,000-ton vessel has sat on its right side in the middle of Charenton Canal for 11 months. Parish President Paul Naquin says, says the obstruction, the obstruction has slowed business through the canal and poses a danger to anyone traveling the waters. Congressman Jeff Landry is upset. He wants the barge removed and he wants it done now and asked why he thought it had gotten to this point. Landry said, because the Corps of Engineers is inept, unquote. The Army Corps of Engineers has authority over the canal. Landry wants him to step up and take control of the barge. The barge capsized on April 30th last year. The owner turned over ownership of the barge to another company, Greenco Industrial Services. Greenco promised to take care of it. That hasn't happened. Now Congressman Landry is going straight to the Army Corps himself. We got what we thought were some movement and negotiation to getting the barge out, but it certainly isn't happening as fast as I'd like it to, he says. Money is the issue, apparently, but both Landry and Naquin said the Corps of Engineers has the means to recoup the money it would cost to remove the barge by selling the parts and then suing the party responsible. Meanwhile, the barge sits idle. Naquin says it's an accident waiting to happen. Building strong, ladies and gentlemen. And getting closer to its customers.
After all said and done, who could blame you? Except for me, anyone would have done the same. You and I, we agree to disagree, then you hide behind your wall, like it never really mattered after all. Seems to me, if you wanna stop crying, what you need is somebody smiles while he's lying. All love will shatter when and the truth can't break the fall. Guess it doesn't really matter after all.
This is Le Show from Santa Fe. You didn't know he was a saint, did you, Santa Fe? Ladies and gentlemen, a lot of news this week coming out about the big oil in the Gulf last year. Some of it kind of cute. In its first sustainability report since the last year, BP, remember them? Whole company appears to be getting their life back. BP said it leaked more oil in 2006 and 2008 than it did last year. Who knew? But wait. On the first page of its report, the company lists the amount of oil, carbon dioxide, and methane it released into the environment in 2010. However, on closer inspection, according to Yahoo News, it turns out that those figures don't include the oil leaked during last summer's oil spill. That makes it easy for the curve to look good, doesn't it? The reasoning? No, there is a reason. No, wait. Come on. Come back. No, there's a reason. According to a message from the company in the report's fine print, quote, no accurate determination, unquote, of the extent of the disaster has been made up to now. The survey goes on to note the company decided to omit that incident in the Gulf, quote, due to our reluctance to report data that has such a high degree of uncertainty, unquote. It's just their passion for the truth. Their passion for absolute accuracy, you see. You do see. So they chose not to factor in the biggest offshore oil spill in American history. Thank you, BP. You indeed have your life back. Transocean, ladies and gentlemen, another company involved in the... They were the operators of the rig, the Deepwater Horizon rig. They were working for BP. And on a similar note to the BP announcement I just shared with you, Transocean this week announced it had its best year in safety performance last year. That is a great big mazel tov to all you guys, because, oh, this is despite the explosion of its Deepwater Horizon rig that left 11 dead and oil gushing into the Gulf. As a result of its success, Transocean's executives received two-thirds of their target safety bonus. Safety accounts for 25% of the equation that determines yearly cash bonuses for Transocean executives, along with financial factors including new rig contracts. The whole thing was rigged. Safety bonuses, ladies and gentlemen, the payout contrasts that with that for 2009 when the company withheld all executive bonuses after incurring four fatalities to underscore the company's commitment to safety. It is an upside-down world, isn't it? But that means money falls out of your pockets. It's a good thing? Notwithstanding, this is Transocean statement, notwithstanding the tragic loss of life in the Gulf of Mexico, we achieved an exemplary statistical safety record. We recorded the best year in safety performance in our company's history based on the total rate of incidents and their severity. Doesn't it make you want to go back and look at what they were doing in previous years if last year was their best? Do they and BP have the same PR person? I guess because two employees of Transocean are refusing to appear before a federal panel investigating the in the Gulf. The inquiry jointly conducted by the Coast Guard and the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management Regulation and Enforcement, the BOEMRE, Oogadugu, is holding hearings in New Orleans this coming week on the failure of the blowout preventer, says the head of the Ocean Energy Bureau, Michael Bromwich. In my judgment, the refusal to come and appear at the investigation is less a legal issue than one of whether Transocean recognizes its moral and corporate responsibility to cooperate with an investigation into the causal factors of the most significant oil spill in the United States history, he said, in a letter. He also threatened the company that its cooperation could affect its future ability to receive permits to operate offshore. You want to bet? The lawyer for one of the two Transocean employees who is refusing to show up, Mike Walsh, says, I made the decision that he just wasn't going to be a subject to a spectacle they call a hearing. I like his PR person. A new paper in Conservation Letters calculates that the numbers of whales and dolphins killed in the could be 50 times higher than the number of carcasses found. The author's a high-powered list of renowned cetacean researchers from Canada, the U.S., Australia, and Scotland. Say many media reports suggest that the spill caused only modest environmental impacts. It may be much bigger. How many whales, dolphins, and porpoises actually died? That problem is tough to figure to begin with and is compounded by a dearth of data in the Gulf, a fact that will work greatly to BP's favor when the time comes to levy fines. But they conclude it may be much more than we think. And going back to what we were talking about, and by we I mean me, at the beginning of the broadcast, you know, who could have known? Who could know? Who can know these things? Transocean said after an autopsy report by Det Norsk Veritas, we talked about that last week, was released, quote, conditions exceeded the scope of the blowout preventer's design parameters. That is to say, we didn't think it would be such a big explosion. The autopsy points out some critical challenges for the injury as it looks to drill increasingly challenging wells, says Dr. Bob B., friend of this program, a UC Berkeley professor of civil and environmental engineering and risk management expert. The problem, he says, is that blowout preventers on most deepwater drilling rigs are mostly about a decade old and aren't designed to meet these challenges. The early 2000 generation of BOPs do not have the reliability needed to conduct these operations. Reliability is at least two orders of magnitude, i.e. 100 times, more reliable than the conventional blowout preventers have demonstrated, he says. The likelihoods of BOP failure were substantially higher than generally appreciated, unquote. A buckling drill pipe, for instance, as what happened in the was never anticipated. Who could have known? Who could have ever dreamed? Now news of AFAC, ladies and gentlemen. You know about the demonstrations and the killings that have occurred, the protests that have occurred in the wake of Pastor Terry Jones' burning of the Quran. And we were all set up, ladies and gentlemen, to do what I think would be a very newsworthy event here today. Just to set the record straight, we were going to burn a Quran and a Bible and see which one burned faster, but this happens to be a no-smoking studio, so we're going to have to postpone that. But the incident was fairly obscure until President Karzai on Thursday called attention to it. Now, here might have been the reason that he did that. He spoke 2 days earlier about the actions of a kill team, a group of U.S. soldiers accused of murdering Afghan civilians for fun. in a speech in Kabul, he said he was shocked and hurt by the photographs published last week by the German magazine Der Spiegel. The photographs shocked the world and led to fears of revenge attacks against NATO troops in Afghanistan. But no such attacks occurred. Karzai said he had been shocked and hurt by the photographs. He said he was talking about the incidents now because the world has to, quote, finally wake up. A group of five soldiers is accused of killing innocent civilians out of pure bloodlust, part of the 5th Striker Brigade. The soldiers allegedly carried out the crimes between January and May last year. To make it appear they were under attack, they used guns and grenades in order to justify killing civilians. They then took photos of themselves grinning while standing over their victims as if posing with hunting trophies. Reportedly, they did some drugs overnight before going out and doing the stuff. The international reaction to the publication of the kill team photos has been muted. And Karzai apparently was trying to raise concern about it unsuccessfully, as you'll hear next here on the show.
From Afghanistan Public Radio, we never get defunded.
From the newly refurbished presidential palace in downtown Kabul.
And you can't be more down than in this downtown. I'm Hamid.
And I'm Wally. We're Ticked and Tacked, the Dammit Brothers.
And this is Karzai Talk.
Yes, we come to you today despite the best efforts of the kill team. Afghanis selling heroin to Americans so they can kill Afghanis.
It's like a system.
A circle of jerks.
It's not a laughing matter.
I know it. I didn't start the laughing.
I know it. I'm sorry.
Although we should be fair. Uh-oh. Don't blame the puppy.
Oh, here my younger brother goes defending his side business.
Correction, dear brother. It's not my side business. It's my day job.
But I know plenty of people use your product.
It's an adult choice.
And don't go off on killing sprees.
No, of course they don't. No. They might lapse into a coma-like state, but...
So being a killing team is an adult choice.
Interesting, though. No demonstrations? No worldwide uproar?
No.
Even after your speech?
Tell me about it.
It's almost as if nobody pays attention to your speeches anymore.
Hey, you've got Libya, you've got Japan.
Face it. We're as fresh as a 98 VW Golf.
But as I said in my speech, you can't blame the Americans. They're good people.
Very special people.
You can't blame the puppy.
Never blame the puppy.
So what is it? Just darn bad luck that some Americans and some puppy get together and boom, here's your killing team?
Hey, dear brother, I'm a provincial administrator, not a philosopher.
Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hi, guys. Bob Gates, third-time listener, second-time caller.
Oh, Mr. Secretary, welcome back.
Thank you.
Last time we had this many calls from someone in a cabinet, it was Wally's ex-business partner who'd been kidnapped and stuffed in a credenza.
Oh, my goodness. I hope he got out okay.
Me too.
So, sir, about the kill team.
Yes, well, that's why I called. Mm. It was obviously a horrible set of circumstances, a kind of thing we'd almost pay good money to avoid.
Bob, let me just play devil's advocate for a minute here.
This is on a first-name basis with the devil.
Stop it. But I couldn't help noticing in the new Libya operation, you were boasting about the lack of civilian casualties, and here, in our part of the world, you know, it's like hair in the Wheaties, just an unavoidable little annoyance.
So the Wheaties are still getting through?
Oh, absolutely, and of course I'm grateful.
Good.
Do you two want to get a room?
No, seriously, Wally, civilian casualties anywhere that we are engaging in military procedures are just, to put it bluntly, it's bad for the brand.
It's like America, come for the humanitarianism, stay for the barbarism.
Right. Nobody needs that, least of all a superpower. But you see, guys, in the first couple of weeks in Libya, we really didn't know who the folks on our side really were. It was easy not to be accidentally killing them. now we're getting some good intel.
From the covert operatives we've read about in the papers?
That's right. So, you probably saw we had our first accidental civilian killings in Libya this week.
So, Bob, you're saying the more intelligence you have,
the more targeting. Otherwise, you're just wasting your intel resources.
You know, I'm ashamed to say that kind of makes sense.
Don't listen to him. It's the puppy talking. But still, the kill team wasn't even a good attempt at looking like accidental killings.
No, you're right. No denying. It was absolutely very sloppy tradecraft. Mm.
So, Bob, did you have a question for us?
Oh, that's right. Format.
Yes.
Well, I suppose you okay with the lack of worldwide uproar, Hamid?
I fired my PR guy. Now I'm okay.
I know the feeling. I made a friend of mine fire hers. Well, thanks, guys. Love the show.
We love having you call, Bob.
Thanks.
And we really love the Wheaties.
So long.
Bye-bye.
We had help today from the Afghan army. An army of one, literally.
Karzai took legal help from the law firm of Ketchum & Nukem. Join me and my younger brother Wally next week for another edition of Karzai Talk.
This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio. Please give.
Yeah, see, late, loose board this week, ladies and gentlemen, as I would have predicted, as I think I did predict. And now,
clean, save, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet.
Save to meter. Save to save to meter.
Yes, it's our friend Nuclear Power, ladies and gentlemen. Here are the words of Alexei Yablokov, a member of the Russian Academy of Sciences and advisor to President Mikhail Gorbachev at the time of Chernobyl. Quote, "When you hear no immediate danger from nuclear radiation, you should run away as far and as fast as you can." Unquote. That's from an article in The Guardian about the uncounted victims of Chernobyl. Konstantin Tatuyin, one of the liquidators who helped clean up the plant, told The Guardian nearly all of his colleagues had died or had cancers of one sort or another, but that no one had ever asked him for evidence. There was burning resentment at the way the UN, the industry, and the Inland Forum pundits had played down the casualties at Chernobyl. Deadline Vienna, the closing of aging nuclear reactors, is expected to peak in 2020 and 2030, posing a major challenge in terms of safety and the environment, says a draft UN Atomic Agency report submitted shortly before the thing in Japan. Says the global nuclear sector maintained a high level of safety performance in 2010, but it warned in some cases plans for nuclear power program development moved faster than the establishment of the necessary regulatory and safety infrastructure. The report obtained by Reuters did not name any countries. Of course not. A senior IAEA official said in a blog comment, "Fukushima should be a wake-up call to reevaluate and strengthen the role of the IAEA in boosting nuclear safety." The report notes many of the reactors now in operation around the world were built in the 1970s and 80s with an average lifespan of about 35 years. Their decommissioning peak will occur in 2020 to 2030, which will present a major managerial, technological, safety, and environmental challenge to those states engaged in nuclear decommissioning. We'll be around then. China has committed itself to establishing an entirely new nuclear energy program using thorium as a fuel within 20 years. This according to the Register in England. The thorium fuel cycle produces almost no plutonium and fewer higher isotope waste, long-lived minor actinides. Thorium is much more abundant than uranium. The reduced plutonium output eases proliferation concerns. Woogadoogu. The energy output per ton is also attractive, even though thorium isn't itself a fissile material. Thorium reactors are also safer with the fuel contained in a low-pressure reactor vessel. I'll be talking more about this as I read more about it, but just keep in mind, China also is investing heavily in new conventional nuclear facilities, and as yet has, according to a report this weekend, no emergency plans for the people living near those plants. So, don't want to necessarily do what China does. From the Hearst Connecticut Media Group, in an effort to preserve profits, New England's nuclear power plant operators are stuffing spent nuclear fuel rods into already crowded storage pools that many believe are more dangerous than the reactors. The spent fuel pools at New England's oldest plants now hold up to 5 times more fuel than they were designed to handle. Pilgrim, for example, which was originally licensed to store 880 fuel assemblies in the pool, currently holds nearly 3,000. A spokesman for Pilgrim did not return emails and phone messages seeking comment. It's clean, it's shape, it's clave, it's clean. An examination of the mountain at Yucca Mountain, according to the New York Times, has shown that if the fuel canisters degrade in millennia to come, water would spread the waste faster than initially thought. Those initial thinkers, that's who we have to find. I blame them. Formed from volcanic material, the mountain's rock was assumed to be barely permeable, but it has cracks through which water travels rapidly. In addition, the United States has about 72,000 tons of spent fuel from civilian sites and many tons of military waste, more than Yucca could hold under current laws. By the way, speaking of tons, hundreds of tons of water a day being used to try to cool the fuel rods in Japan. And then that water, where does that water go? Where does that water go? Some of it's leaking into the ocean. But where do you store the highly radioactive water? and the planet never gets its water back. Clean, cheap, safe, too cheap, clean, cheap, safe, safe to meter. It's our friend the Atom. Addy, can you find your way out?
I sure can.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the East Coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world by the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone, it's stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like catching and punishing those initial thinkers. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Hawaii, and Chicago desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The music heard on this broadcast, the playlist thereof, and an email address for the broadcast, just some of what's available at harryshearer.com. Tonight in Albuquerque, tomorrow night in Taos, I'll be there for screenings of The Big Uneasy, opening near you soon, not me, the film. Check TheBigUneasy.com for information. And the show is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress and originates through the facility, Century of Progress Productions, and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica. A community recognizes it around the world as the home of the homeless. I'm going to go catch up on my sleep. So long from Santa Fe.